This is the Horse Radio Network.
I am Coach Jen in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Leave, and I am standing in the cross ties, also known as the hair salon, and you're listening to the monthly grooming episode of Horses in the Morning. This is episode number 2212 for June 27th. And this episode is brought to you by Shapley's Superior Equine Grooming Products and the awesome hands-on grooming gloves.
Good morning!
You look marvelous, darling.
Thank you very much.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Greetings, Leave. Welcome back. You're here the fourth Thursday of every month. How you doing?
I'm really good. There's so much stuff, goodness that happens with summer, and we're gonna literally tackle a lot of it today.
That's right. Coming up on today's show, we're gonna be talking about colors of horses, colors of tack, itchy skin, and zebra stripes, and why your horse wants some. Plus, we're gonna be chatting with Isabel, the groom for the power couple of eventing, Leslie and Leslie Law.
Well, now I think everybody, after we get through the equiscience about the zebras, everybody's going to want to be striped. It's amazing. It's really weird and amazing.
It's going to be trending.
Yeah, I hope so. Hashtag zebras are weird or something like that.
You really need to get the hashtag horses are weird thing put on t-shirts or caps or something.
I don't, you know, honestly, I need to first really fully understand how hashtags work. I understand it's like a Twitter thing, but I'm like, who has time for that?
I have no idea how hashtags work, which is why I want to put them on a coffee mug instead of in my computer.
That's probably a really good idea.
And speaking of good ideas, our guest is here. That would be Isabel, the super groom for Leslie and Leslie Law, whom you met at the Land Rover 3-day event back in Lexington back in April. Let's see if we can't dig out some of her grooming secrets.
So, Isabel, you're on the line with Jen and I. And before we dig into like the fun, interesting things, tell us, how long have you been grooming for the Leslies?
I started grooming for the Laws November 2015. And that was, you know, strictly a working student gig. They already had a head girl position filled and, you know, all the boxes checked. I just wanted to come and learn, and certainly have.
Yeah. And so you're still there, which obviously it's worked out okay. Do you have any specific goals for your career in horses? Do you want to stick with grooming more, or do you want to move into a different position?
No, I think that, you know, we all, you know, in the working student mindset, we all have that end goal of competing at the highest level that we can achieve, unless, you know,
right
down the road we find out that it's too scary or it's too much, too expensive, and we reroute.
But right.
I think that's the goal for everyone. And I just happened to get looped into grooming and kind of be the last one standing after a number of girls have sort of, you know, been through the program and only wanted to stay a summer or a certain season or had to go back to school. So I just stuck with it. And
well, good.
Was lucky enough for everything to line up and to have Leslie have a horse go to Rolex.
Yeah. So
be in the right place at the right time.
Right. So you started in 2015 and here you were in 2019. You end up in Kentucky for like the biggest horse show ever, which was really amazing. So obviously you've been with your team for several years now. And I'm sure they've taught you all sorts of amazing things. Have you taught them anything about grooming or horsemanship? Have you had like any big like moments of like, oh, this is a teaching moment for my boss?
Oh, I mean, that's a tough one. And I think even if I have, they'd never say it.
Okay. Okay. That's probably fair. That's probably fair.
You know, you get those little nods of approval, though. You know, they're always, you know, up on a different level, it feels like, and you're always waiting for that, you know, little pat on the head, the good boy feeling.
Right.
Like, okay.
Now, yes. Leslie is British, yes?
Mm-hmm.
So is there any...
Mrs. Leslie's Canadian.
And Mrs. Leslie's Canadian. So is there anything in the grooming realm that they've brought over from their respective homelands to Florida, yes, that you had never known about?
Yeah, some European techniques, say pulling a tail, is something that I didn't even know
existed, right?
You should or could do to a horse as far as grooming goes. And that's, you know, they don't shave or clip any of their tails ever. It's either pulled or it's braided. And I know there's all types of controversy revolving around shaving ear and whisker hair,
right,
in Europe. And you know, I'm allowed to knock off whatever old man grandpa ear hair we may have that looks scraggly, but all the horses in the barn have full set of whiskers, so
right,
that's kind
right.
of interesting, which I've grown to not mind at all.
Yeah. So when I was grooming for dressage riders, we left whiskers on, but as a youngster, when I rode the hunters, it was, everybody was shaved, like fresh faces, yes, all the time. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting that it's starting to kind of spread into other types of disciplines and things like that. Now, when you're getting ready for a show, if it's that big one in Kentucky, or you know, even just like a smaller show, do you have a grooming tip that gives your horse the competitive advantage? Well, at least to make them look really, mm-hmm. really good.
Well, I think it depends, you know, obviously on what color you're dealing with, because if you've got the chestnuts or the bays or
right.
something darker, you want to give them a bath the day before so that the oils in their coat have time to recover, and you can buffer and spot treat and really elbow grease everything the next day. And
right.
they're not so dry and fluffed looking. They're nice and shiny the following day. But when it comes to grays, that's completely different and a pain.
It is.
Yeah. You try and, you know, even in our day to day, you know, washing and grooming and cooling horses out, I try and remind the girls to, you know, throw a little soap, even if it's just, you know, some moisturizing dish soap, Head and Shoulders, something in those white tails to keep them from getting so stained. And then it's easier
right.
come showtime right. to stay on top of it.
Yeah. But, and I truly believe if you don't have to do a lot to a horse's tail
mm-hmm.
every day, but if you are managing it every day, you don't have like those big tail projects, like with mm-hmm. the deadline looming over you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, like what you had talked about with the European tail pulling, that's something
yes.
you don't want to do the day before a show. That takes, you know, little bits over time, you know,
right.
a week or two leading up to the actual event that you're pulling hairs and tidying up so that you don't just kind of leave the horse with raw sides of the tail.
Right.
The day before.
It's really interesting. I had never heard about pulling tails until I started talking with some eventing grooms. And it's, just in case somebody out there doesn't know, you're only pulling like the very tops and the very sides of the tail mm-hmm. really, really close to where the tail comes out of your horse. Mm-hmm. to kind of give them that tapered look so their butt cheeks look bigger and rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have a draft horse that is, you know, has a huge badonk, I totally would mm-hmm. not pull that tail, but it's mm-hmm. tradition in the eventing world to do that. Now,
yeah.
do you keep your horses clipped year round?
Oh, we, we try to. I mean, some horses are obviously hairier than others. Actually, the one that we took to Kentucky this past year, he hadn't been clipped actually all winter. And I think it worked to our advantage because he just had such a naturally slick coat. But yeah, there are definitely others that get clipped, you know, three times during the show season just because they keep fluffing back up.
But, do you guys clip more for like their comfort level because they're obviously, you know, high level eventers and it's generating a ton of body heat running cross country and things like that? Or is it more cosmetic or is it half and half?
No, I'd say it's absolutely more for the comfort of the horse in this case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because it really doesn't matter at the end of the day what the horse looks like. I mean, of course it does, but...
Right. You want them to be healthy and comfortable, and then if they happen to look good, it's kind of like this nice big bonus, right?
Right. You work with what you've got, and if you've done a good job managing up until that point, you should have a good result, regardless of what the clipped coat might look like. It may not be your favorite, you know, time of season for that specific horse. They may look a little mousy or dull or what have you, but like I said, if you've done a good job and done all you can do up to that point,
they're
going to
have
a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For a second there, you sounded like a marriage counselor. I'm just saying, but it's kind of funny how like the same advice can apply to a lot of different things.
Oh God. Yeah, I know.
So I'm also really curious, speaking of health and comfort of your horses, do you have something that you do every single day to the horses to make sure that they stay healthy? Like, do you have some sort of routine with checking legs, or do you give them a special supplement or something for their mental health? What is it that you do to make sure your horses stay the healthiest?
Well, being in the Laws program, they're actually, funny enough, not huge on supplements. I think they've got the one that they're sponsored by now, Choice of Champions supplements, which I've been happy with their sweating product for some of our Irish imports that don't
sweat
handle
a lot
the summer very well.
Right.
And, you know, they've got a good gut and joint supplement and X, Y, and Z good products. And Triple Crown is also our grain sponsor. So that's just what we feed. And I've seen good results with that. But as far as your day-to-day, I mean, every time we bring a horse in from turnout, all their legs are felt and, you know, we pick up all their feet to make sure they're not, you know, stepping on a clip or the shoes are all still tight. And day-to-day grooming, obviously picking feet and,
right,
and just putting hands on everything, even if you wouldn't expect there to be a problem, just knowing what it looks like all the time.
Yep. You have to memorize all the horses so that you know when something is like, wait, was that there yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We had a horse come into the barn this morning from turnout. He'd somehow removed one of his hind chestnuts. I'm like, I don't even know how that happens, but his leg was just one of those things where you're like, huh, and this is why you look and inspect your horses every day, because they're like, he was totally fine. He's like, hey, check me out. I'm totally normal. Mm-hmm. Oh, except for this. I took off one of my chestnuts. And I was like, okay. But yeah.
Or, you know, sometimes if you're working in the dark, you know, whether it be super early in the morning or you're doing a check before bed, like a night check, and some of those horses come in and they've got dark legs, you know, you want
to know at
a glance if there's a new cut that may have scabbed over and the blood's dry, and you wouldn't necessarily see that in a dark stall. So always feel legs and pick up their feet.
Yep. And in case anybody is wondering, yes, grooms often work before sunup and all the way until after sundown, and then come back and do night check. anything else, Isabel, you want to share with your days as a groom for the Laws in the land of eventing?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, I learned a lot even just in that week of being in Kentucky. Like, I had never officially braided a tail for a competition until Land Rover, which was stressful.
Wow. They were just like, here's the deep end, jump.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had seen girls do it, and I had come up with a couple different, you know, like my interpretation of what I liked.
Right.
And how far down it should go and how you finish it. You know, everyone has their own way. And quarter marks are another thing that I had never really had to deal with. We usually have like another groom on hand or like a friend around the corner at a different, you know, at some of those recognized events that could do them. And
right.
Like I said, they'd showed me a couple times, but when it came down to it, Mr. Leslie actually showed me.
Oh, and cool.
Yeah. You know, so like I'm 100% positive if he had a week to brush up on his skills, he could probably outgroom me in a heartbeat. Like,
well, that's kind of
these people. Yeah. They know what they're doing, and they've gotten to this point by being completely immersed in it. So it's cool to think about.
What an education. What an education.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And how do you like the hands-on grooming gloves?
Oh, everyone likes them. I have to hide them.
Oh, okay.
No, I've just been leaving them out because, you know, everyone asked where I got them, and all the horses are really happy with them. I like how there's a curry on each little joint of your finger almost, and so you can get those really hard to reach places, like around their eyeballs and like heel bulbs and pasterns, and everything's covered. It's really cool.
You're hired.
So, I've been really happy with it.
Well, good.
They're breathable. Like my original go-to was that rubber mitt with all the little knobs on it.
Did you throw it away? And
in the Florida summer, it's like you're just dripping sweat out of this mitt after putting your hand in it. And so the glove is my new go-to for the modern.
Well, good. Well, good. And
just
a disclosure for everybody listening, I did not set her up for that before I called her. Like, that was completely impromptu.
I came up with that all by myself. I enjoy them. Everyone should buy one.
Well, Jen or Isabel, thank you so much. And Jen, thank you so much. And is there a way that we can follow you along on social media, Isabel?
Oh, yeah. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, just Isabel Holden. Everyone adds extra letters to the end of my name, but it's just Isabel.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, we'll look for all of your updates on Instagram. We want to see all of your tail braids from now on.
Oh, gosh.
Just spam us with tail braids.
You know I'll be practicing. Always practicing.
All right. But
thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my gosh. That was so much fun. I think we're going to take a quick break from grooming talk and do a little bit of hay and talk with Mary Ann Kennedy.
So far from winter, the grass is green. Hard to imagine that we will need to feed the horses so slick and round. But they're gonna need it when snow's on the ground. Hay in time, hay in time. Making hay while the sun shines. Sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Calling all your favorites, cause it's hay in time. So call up your family, call all your friends, and we'll drink a cold one when the day ends. And when we stack that final bale, we'll celebrate and it's 99. Calling all your favors, 'cause it's haying time. If you are a farmer, you know it won't make you rich. It's hard work, that's no lie. But the satisfaction at the end of days like this, no amount of money can buy. Sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Call up all the neighbors, the givers and the takers, calling all your favors, 'cause it's haying time.
And you can find all of Marianne Kennedy's music at MarianneKennedy.com and also on your favorite streaming services like iTunes and CD Baby. And what is next on the docket, Leave?
Are you ready to dive into like summer skin crud stuff?
I am. Yeah. Okay. I am. As we record this show is a June show, as we mentioned at the opening. So most of the United States is well and truly into summer, with the exception of maybe Colorado, who's still getting snow. But the rest of us, it's summertime. It's sweaty. It's sticky. It's itchy. It's sunny. It's humid, etc. So please enlighten us.
Most of the topics today I'm pulling from listener questions. People tag me on the Pro Equines Facebook group, and which is the Pro Equine Grooms group. And I have very specific questions about Swedish. And so I think I'm going to start there, because Swedish is something that is not super, super common in the States. It's also called Queensland itch, because in the Queensland area of Australia, some ridiculous number, like 30 to 40% of all horses there have this particular skin ailment. In the US, it's not that much, but it is high stress for a horse owner to have a horse with sweet itch, because there is a lot of uncomfortable horse stuff going on. And in a nutshell, sweet itch is started with this little tiny gnat, the noceum. And the noceum will come and they'll bite your horse, typically on the dorsal side, which is the top side, like his rump, the saddle area, the neck, sometimes around the ears, sometimes the belly. But these bugs tend to stay away from the underside of your horse and the legs. And what happens is your horse says, wow, that's a tiny, tiny gnat, but I'm going to have this incredibly dramatic and greatly overreacting reaction to this bite. And your horse is going to get super itchy, and he's going to start to then do whatever he can to get relief from the itch. And that's where you run into the problems, is that horses will literally rub themselves raw. It's bad. It's really bad. So there's some things that you really have to do as a horse owner. And one of them is to go back to what I call the barrier method. And I talk about the barrier method in terms of grooming a lot. Like, you need to put a bunch of oil and protective things between your horse's coat and the environment. And it's the same thing for sweet itch. You have to basically, you know, cocoon or bubble your horse away from these gnats. And there's a couple of ways to do that. Jen, I'm sure you're familiar with fly sheets. You live where bugs are everywhere all year long. But the typical fly sheets doesn't have like leg closures and a full belly covering, and it doesn't go all the way up their head and neck and down, leaving little eye holes, and then cover most of their muzzle. But you can get special sweet itch fly suits.
Have you ever seen a horse? Those? Yes. It looks like something that a horse would wear if he was going to go for a moonwalk.
Yes, absolutely. And you'll notice that the legs are open because that's not where the bugs like to hang out. So basically, if you have a horse with sweet itch, like long before the bugs come out, he needs to start wearing this. The other thing you can do is start to transition your horse to different turnout times. So the gnats that cause the sweet itch are really active dawn and dusk. Your horse needs to be somewhere where the gnats are not. So like in a stall or a shelter with a fan, like on full blast, if you can, if it's even possible, and I've seen this done before and it actually works out really, really well because the ventilation is maintained, but you can on a horse's stall or shelter, you can literally screen the entire thing to keep the bugs out. And you just have to create, if possible, a screened in area for your horse to live during the dawn and the dusk hours. The rest of the day is typically you're going to be fine. And then you need to start to think about how you're going to help your horse not be so itchy, because that's truly where the problem is. And obviously your vet's going to be a huge source of systemic medications and maybe some topical medications as well. There's lots of products that you can use. Shapley's has a great shampoo called Medicare. It's got the most amazing lemongrass and tea tree oil, which makes it a funny shade of green, but it also makes it just delightfully delicious smelling. But the lemongrass and the tea tree are really, really soothing to horses. So anytime you have a horse that's got a sensitive skin coat, that's the kind of stuff you would want to use. So when you start to combine all those things together, you can really tackle sweet itch from a holistic approach. But it really boils down to is battle of the bugs, and you need to have those barriers between the bugs and your horse.
That's what it boils down to. Bug armor.
Bug armor, and your horse is going to look funny in his pasture meets. So they're going to point and laugh at him, but too bad, so sad.
There you go.
Yeah. So another really common thing that I hear about from people is that like their horse's tail is really, really itchy and they've started to rub the tail kind of usually towards the top of the tail, but on the tailbone. So you've got this really beautiful, long flowing tail. And then at the very top, usually about somewhere around eye level for us, you get sort of like these bald patches, right? So many different reasons for this. Now, everybody's favorite internet solution for this is Listerine. And I'm like,
yes, you do
great.
See that one a lot. Yes.
Yes. And I'm like, apparently we all have like the mintiest breath ever, because we all have like, you know, Costco sized stores of Listerine around. But Listerine is great if it is a skin condition, like too much shampoo residue is left on your horse's tail that makes him a little itchy. Listerine's not going to do anything for pinworms. And we've talked about that on the show before, but as a quick and disgusting refresher, pinworms like live just in the very distal end of your horse's digestive system, like around his anus and just inside his rectum. And they come out at night. Like they literally just crawl their way out of your horse and lay their eggs around your horse's anus, like under his tail, which creates mega, mega itch. Listerine's not going to do anything for that. You're going to need to talk with your vet and get like a targeted dewormer that's going to take care of the pinworms. Or he might have a sheath or a set of udders that needs a little bit of attention there. So while tail rubbing is super and great, try Listerine, but know that unless you've narrowed it down to a shampoo residue problem, you're probably just throwing good mouthwash away. Make sense?
Good mouthwash away.
And I mean, I know it's not super expensive, but like, yeah. So the other thing to think about, especially in summer season, so I see this a lot too. Everybody wants homemade fly sprays because it's more quote unquote natural. And I'm like, great, I totally get it. If you have a source of essential oil that you trust, you could make your own fly spray, whatever. But also know that there are a lot of flies out there, including a lot of gnats, that are attracted to delicious smelling things. So, because they smell like flowers, right?
Oh, yeah. Maybe not lavender oil?
Yeah, lavender, some of this, not necessarily the citronellas, but some of the citrus oils and the other really common popular like eucalyptus oils that you see in recipes a lot for homemade fly sprays. Those actually attract a whole other like classification of insects. So you might be doing something for stable flies, but then you have this whole other swarm of stuff to deal with. So again, sometimes the barrier method is just the best. One other thing that I see quite a bit in summer, hives. You ever seen a horse with hives?
Oh, it's sad.
It is. It just, it kind of makes my heart ache a little bit because, well, one, I wonder how itchy they are. A lot of horses will get hives and they're not itchy at all. Some horses will get hives and like they'll just like completely just throw themselves against whatever they can to get some sort of relief. And here's the thing with hives. Very often they've popped up on your horse as a result of something that your horse has come into direct contact with, like, you know, a new grooming product, or you borrowed somebody's brush accidentally and your horse didn't like that other horse's, you know, fly spray or whatever. Maybe they've rolled in the pasture and they rolled on a weed that they don't like. So sometimes the hives also come from something that your horse has eaten, which, again, allergies, if you aren't aware of this, allergies can happen to you at any point in your life. Like tomorrow, I could suddenly be allergic to peanut butter. I would have a big problem with that because I love peanut butter. But just because your horse hasn't been allergic to X, Y, or Z in the past, he might come up being allergic to it in the future. But don't get all paranoid about that. Just deal with the hives at hand. If you come to the barn one day and your horse has all of these like little connect the dot constellation type patterns on his body, do give your vet a call. Most of the time, hives are completely benign. They go away. But sometimes hives can happen inside your horse, like inside his mouth, inside his throat. Wow. Yeah. So what does that interfere with? Horse's favorite thing to do, eat. Horse's second favorite thing to do, breathe. So you want to take hives seriously, but know that hopefully you'll be able to narrow down a cause and your horse is going to get some pretty instant relief. And your vet can absolutely help you with either topicals or systemic things to help the hives go away.
Yeah, hives are icky and scary, and because they can be from so many different things. And like you said, it's scary because like, okay, is there something going on the inside?
Right. Right.
I don't know about. So yeah, that whole, take his vitals, drop your vet a call, say, hey, my horse has some hives. Stay tuned.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. The other thing about hives is that, you're going to have to like put on your like Sherlock Holmes hat and get like super Nancy Drew on it and try and narrow things down as to what it might be. And you're going to have to narrow things down into like, what have you put on your horse? What has your horse put on your horse? Meaning, what did he roll in? Is there new shavings, new bedding? Is there a new hay? Is there a new feed? You really kind of have to play a little detective-y there. All right, I got one more summer skin issue to talk about. And this is, it's kind of my favorite one. No, that's not right. It's my summer skin issue that I'm most fascinated with because I'd only ever heard about it when I lived in California. I only heard about this happening on the East Coast until I saw it in California. And I was like, ooh, it's everywhere. It's a summer sore. Have you heard of these?
Oh, the bane of our existence here in Florida.
Yes, yes. And just, you know, again, a little gross out warning. I'm going to try and make this not super, super gross in how this works. But it's fly and worm related. And your horse, again, one more time, being super, super, super dramatic and overreacting. But basically, horses have this stomach worm, the Habronema worm, and it's actually an entire genus of intestinal parasites called the genus is Habronema. But anyway, These worms live in some horses, and their larvae is actually released in a horse's manure. Instead of the eggs, it's actually the larvae that are released in the manure. And then here you come along with a stable fly. The stable flies will land on the manure and eat these larvae, which is, I guess, a pretty, you know, common thing for flies to eat. Sounds gross to me, but whatever. Now, this fly, he's going to buzz around. He's going to land on your horse. Maybe he lands on a small cut or a small, like, especially in South Florida, if there's like a little mud fever or scratches going on, a fly could land on one of those little scabs or sores from dew poisoning. And then what happens is that fly now deposits kind of like part of his fly and the worm all together. And then your horse's immune system goes haywire. It goes bonkers. It totally overreacts. And you have a giant, giant open grotto sore, right?
It starts out teeny, but it's not going to stay teeny.
No. And some of these sores can take months, like 9 to 12 months to totally heal. And it's just because there's like now this little itty bitty piece of a worm living inside your horse's sore. And it just gets out of control with the inflammation and the response of it. So the other really fascinating thing about summer sores is that they can actually also happen without a wound present. Because horses like to land in soft mucousy areas, like, you know, around the eyes, around noses, around sheaths. And the summer sore that I saw in California, first one I'd ever seen, was on the inside of a horse's sheath. Inside.
Well, that's probably the worst.
And I was like, I felt so, so bad for this little guy. So bad, because it got so swollen in like no time flat. Well, one, nobody knew there was a sore there, if there even was one. But the next day, like half of his sheath off to one side was swollen so much that he couldn't fully retract. And then you could just kind of see the edge of the summer sore. And when you peeled it back, it was probably about the size of like a 50-cent piece.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was.
That's really a bad one. Yeah.
And basically, you have to treat them again using a barrier method. You have got to get the flies away from this. So whatever you can do to wrap up your horse, there's a new product that... it's not a new product, but it's a new company that I am going to start working with. They're called Socks for Horses. They make a product called Several Winnies. These are nice because not only are they like full covering on a horse's lower legs, they keep the flies away, and the properties of the silver in the fabric help heal things. But I digress. So, You have to take a summer sore and basically create like a castle, a fort around it to keep the flies out. But then you also have to treat the worm infection and the inflammation from the inside. So sometimes you're deworming the horse with, usually it's ivermectin, but honestly, your vet has to be involved with this because it can get so out of control so quickly. Maybe you're doing some anti-inflammatories. Maybe you're putting a dewormer directly on the sore. Again, your vets is going to be the expert on that. But these are tough, tough sores to heal. And I kind of think summer sore might not be the right name for them because they could happen year round. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Here in Florida, we can get them year round because right. We have flying and biting insects year round.
Year round. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of horses though, that have chronic ones,
right.
They will look like they heal up over the winter months
and then boom,
and then they re-erupt in the springtime when the biting flies come back out. Cause in the winter time, we don't have as many, it's not that big a deal. But then in the summer when they come back out, it's like, oh, look, it's back. That's because it never really healed up to begin with. And yeah, no, I'm on your side. If you suspect your horse has a summer sore, do get veterinary intervention before it gets to be the size of a half dollar or larger. Oh, I have seen them myself.
They're awful.
Two to 3 inches across.
Yeah, they're awful. Yeah. And I can't even imagine how uncomfortable they are. Like, it just seems terrible.
They itch. They itchy. Yeah.
Oy. Yeah. And they've got those little wormies living in them, and that's just the really gross part. But also weirdly fascinating. So I will just also say this, because we talked a lot about barriers and different products and things like that. But I know I mentioned this in a previous podcast, but I have my own shopping page now. So if you need to pick up any sort of fly control treatments or barriers for bugs and things like that, if they're all listed on my shopping page, and I'm happy to put that link along with the sponsor links to Shapley's and Hands On into the show notes, so everybody can access that really easily. All right, you ready to get your zebra stripe on?
My zebra stripe. Yeah, I'm curious about this because it's been all over social media. The somebody did research somewhere about zebra stripes and why they're effective for zebras. So enlighten me some more.
Absolutely. So there was a pair of zoologists who were like, basically, it's actually a really interesting story. She, as a child, went on safari and was obsessed with zebras ever since she saw them on safari as a child. And here she is kind of unraveling a fairly interesting hypothesis about why zebras have stripes and what they really do. So it really boils down to temperature control, like how a zebra regulates their own body temperature. And what's really interesting is they discovered that the black stripes on a zebra are usually 12 to 15 degrees Celsius warmer than the white stripes. Now, that's a big jump in terms of, you know, Fahrenheit. So just, you know, big temperature difference between the white and the black stripe, logically, because black is going to absorb a lot more heat from sunlight than white will. And what they've also found is that a zebra, now this is where it gets fascinating and even more fascinating. A zebra is able to make the black hairs stand on end while the white hairs lay flat.
Huh.
Could you imagine having that much self-awareness to make that happen?
Huh.
Oh, just completely amazing, these zebras. So what they're starting to realize is that is keeping the zebra's body temperature regulated, because the black's going to heat up from the sun, but because they can lift the hair off, that helps the cooling. Same with the white hair. It stays a little bit cooler. Now, lathrin is my favorite mystery substance that I love to bust myths about. So a lot of people on the internet, through no fault of their own, believe that a really foamy horse is a horse that's been overworked and is in a lot of danger. A really foamy horse is foamy because there's this chemical in sweat and also saliva called lathrin that creates foam when there's friction applied. So if you're riding your horse and he's getting sweaty, he's got a lot of lathrin in his sweats. And again, the amount of lathrin a horse has in their sweat is going to vary from horse to horse. But when that sweat meets the reins or your leg or your horse's butt cheeks, it's going to start to foam up. Now, lathrin developed as a way to kind of digest food because it's a surfactant. And what that means is it helps dispense sweat along your horse's hair so it evaporates better and cools your horse better. Now, I realize I have done like a complete tangent from the zebras, yeah?
Yeah, kind of.
So I'm just going to make a hard U-turn. We're going to come back to the zebras. So we've got the zebras. They've got the white and the black. Some lays flat, some stands up. They've got the lathrin as well. When the black hair stands up, the lathrin spreads out even more, helping the zebra cool off even more. Isn't that nuts? So the zebras have like figured out, they're like, we're going to approach this lots of different ways. I'm going to have different colors, and then I'm going to move some hair and leave some not moving. And then I'm also going to make this lather and stuff to make my sweat work better. So fun fact about zebras, you've seen those zebra fly sheets?
Yes.
Yeah. So researchers are starting to understand that zebras are not as attractive to bugs because there's the temperature difference. Bugs get confused because parts of the zebra are hot and parts are cold. Isn't that weird?
Huh.
So that's the equiscience about zebras and how they stay cool and why they have stripes, and also why a zebra print fly sheet might not be a bad idea for your horse.
Exactly, because you're putting that shield on there, but you still want to reduce the number of them that land, right? Yeah,
because I don't know through what mechanism or not, but apparently flies are like, oh, I don't want to land there because the temperature differences are too weird and the color makes them dizzy or something. But anyway, it all works out in the end if you have a zebra printed fly sheet or a zebra printed full body Swedish thing.
Yeah, it's the insect version of the psychedelic acid trip poster from the 70s.
Pretty much. And all of a sudden I had this like huge flash of like a tie dye bed sheet and just lava lamps everywhere.
There we go.
Everywhere the lava lamps. Yes.
Isn't that interesting? Huh?
Yeah.
All kind of bug stuff today.
I know. Coming full, well, and now I'm going to like completely detour again because we're going to talk about equifitness. And this is a really short one. And again, I'm going to relate it to something I've seen on the internet. I'm sure everybody has seen some list or another about how many calories you burn doing barn chores.
Yes. And it's never as high as I think it should be.
Well, yeah. Well, me either. I'm like, well, that's only half a pint of ice cream. That's not enough.
Exactly.
But I've always wondered, because I like to wonder these things, where did these numbers come from? And I've never been able to find a source for these numbers. So I honestly think it was just somebody randomly typing them into a spreadsheet somewhere. And they're like, oh, I'm going to print this and then put it. Anyway, I found the source of a number. How many calories you burn while riding.
Really?
And I like this study because it was conducted at Texas A&M and College Station, where actually both my husband and I went to school. And so it makes me feel, you know, a little nostalgic for the good old days in college. And they have found that when you ride a horse for 45 minutes, walk, trot, and canter, and it doesn't go into specifics about how much trotting, if it's posting or sitting or not, but we're just going to say pleasure riding, walk, trot, canter, for 45 minutes, you can burn about 200 calories.
That's all?
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow.
Maybe the horse does do all the work.
That's barely a granola bar.
I know. Now, these were also 45-minute sessions, and they were on Western horses, which I'm not disparaging Western horses, like it's not a workout, because it can be. They were just looking for some sort of baseline walk, trot, canter, 45 minutes. And then they did another group where they measured the calorie burn for riders that were on more active type horses, like reining horses and cutting horses. And they found there that the energy expenditure and the heart rate responses were much, much greater, suggesting they could burn up to 400 calories in about 45 minutes if you are on a more active horse or a different discipline that requires a little bit more activity than just like a pleasure ride.
Well, yeah, a Western pleasure horse is designed to not create
right
that or that's the whole yeah. point of the discipline.
Yeah, but if you're trail riding and you pick up a little trot or a lope out on the trail, you know, that could be considered, like, I would imagine closer to the 200 calories in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm schooling cross country, I'm burning a lot of calories just through fear alone, much less like actually, you know, physically burning calories. If I'm riding a dressage horse, I'm burning a lot of calories because OMG, the sitting trot, right?
There you go.
But it was interesting that I finally tracked down a number.
And obviously, where they came from.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And obviously, there's a lot more research to be done and things like that. And different things come into play as well. Like, you know, maybe you did, you know, 29 stall cleanings before you rode, your calorie burn for the day is going to be a little bit greater than if you just showed up and swung the leg over.
I tell you, cleaning stalls is the one that burns the calories, man.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Cleaning stalls and grooming. Those are the two biggies for me.
I'll second you on the grooming.
That's a whole body workout.
And I just like grooming. I'm going to do it longer because I like it. It makes me happy.
I don't necessarily like it as much as I like the results.
Oh, well, yeah.
If I could wave a magic wand and get those results, I'd be okay with that. But that doesn't work that way.
Are you kidding? My entire website is dedicated to magic wand waving. I have all the secrets. All of them. I have so many years of trial and error. I'm just going to put the cream out there. Like, you guys don't even know, like, all the stuff that I've tried that's been, like, epic fails. Anyway, so that's fitness for today. And I have a slew of other listener questions. You want to just start rolling through them?
Let's do it.
Okay. We're going to talk colors, lots of colors. And we're going to start talking about colors of tack. So I've got a funny story for you, Jen. For a long time and still, gosh, even still I do this. How many years have I been doing these things? So probably for like 8 years or so, I will go to some horse expos and things like that around the nation, and I'll be a featured presenter or a clinician or something like that and give talks to basically whoever shows up. And, you know, I typically do talks on like how to clip and like how to groom and hoof care and stuff like that. What do you think was the talk that got the most people ever that showed up to listen to me talk? Any ideas?
We're talking about color. How to keep your horse's coat from fading.
Well, close.
No, not that one. Okay. Which one was it?
My most popular talk ever was tack cleaning. Like, I'm serious. Tack cleaning.
Really?
I was like, does nobody ever clean their tack? And the audience is like, no, we don't. And I'm like, oh my God. a little bit of my inner groom died that day, but I was so happy to educate people about like how important it is to take care of your tack for two reasons. Tack is leather usually, and leather used to be alive. And when you think about a living structure, it's held together with bonds, like at the very, like the smallest level, cells are held together. But, you know, by intercellular fluid and things like that. And when you think about a piece of leather, it used to be somebody's skin, right? Somebody's hide. And it's made of proteins. And inside a piece of leather, there's all these little protein bonds holding it all together. Well, if you don't take care of your leather, the protein bonds are like, well, we're neglected. So guess what? We're going to die. And then they start dying. And that's when you start getting cracked leather. And a lot of times you can't necessarily see a lot of the cracks that are going on because they're inside. But cracked leather does two things. One, it just doesn't look very good. But also the protein bonds give your leather structure and stability. And when those bonds start to be broken, the integrity of your saddle and your bridle actually starts to be broken. And that's when you get like snapped reins and your billet snaps and your girth starts to dangle underneath your horse and things like that. Yeah. Which incidentally only happens when you're trying to impress somebody. You're like, watch what I can do. And then your girth snaps or, you know, one of your reins pops off the bit. So that's why I think tack is really, really important. And so I tell you about the protein bond so we can start talking about oil. And this all, I promise this all relates to color of tack. I promise.
Sure about that.
Yeah. So I see this a lot. Like somebody will have this absolutely desiccated saddle that basically looks like an old cracker. And they'll be like, well, I'm just going to oil it. It'll be back to life. No problem. You can oil, and you're going to get some flexibility back in the saddle. You're going to get some shine. You're going to get some color back in the saddle. You're never going to get the strength back. So I really encourage you to take care of your leather, especially because it's so expensive to buy tack that you really only want to do it once, you know, and then take care of what you have for as long as possible. The other thing with oil is that it can, and sometimes on purpose, will darken leather. So let's say you're treating yourself, it's Christmas or your birthday or whatever, it's Tuesday, and you get a new saddle for your horse, and it's this really, really funny shade of like orange, like part brown, part orange. When you start to oil the saddle, are you laughing at orange?
I'm laughing at orange. I like orange. Yeah.
That's the best way to describe like a new saddle. They're just this funny color. So when you start to oil the saddle, because that seems to be the thing, you buy a saddle, you oil it, the oil is actually going to darken it up. Now, some of the oils like the neat's foot oil, those can darken up a saddle just a little bit. If you really, really want to darken a saddle, go for a hydrophane oil. And those on purpose will darken tack. If you want to stick with the orange color or whatever color your saddle comes with, skip oiling altogether and just stick with a conditioner like a balsam, like a leader balsam. Those might darken just a smidge, but as the balsam soaks in, typically the orange color will start to come back. It's up to you if you want to change the color of your tack or not. But also I look at it this way. Your butt covers it, right? So, and hopefully when you're riding, you're not looking down at your saddle, you're looking where you're going. I don't want to tell anybody how to ride their horse, but it just makes sense to me not to look at your saddle while you're riding. Just keep your eyes up and stuff.
That's probably pretty universal.
Yeah. I hope
that's probably universal.
So here's the other thing. Have you started noticing that a lot more tack has white on it?
That seems to be trending, huh?
Yeah. The white piping and stuff like that. Yeah. So what do you think happens when white piping starts to get dry because you're not keeping it cleaned and conditioned?
Oh, it's going to crack and be really ugly.
Yes. It's going to look like really, really gross grout lines in the most disgusting public bathroom you've ever been in your life.
Oh, thank you for that visual. Oh, man. Yeah.
Well, I was like, grout lines. Where are grout lines? They're in, yes. So when the white leather starts to crack, that's when all of the dirt and stuff's going to start to settle in there. So whatever you can do to very, very gently clean and condition that white leather tack to keep the cracks out is going to do you a world of good in the long run. Now, let's just say you accidentally like fell down on the job and you've got some white leather and it's not looking so bright. You can use a magic eraser, one of those groomy spongy things, on your white leather, but just know it might be a little bit abrasive. So I would do kind of like a test patch where, you know, you're not going to see it so much. So if you're working on like a nose band or something, do a test patch, you know, where the nose band would be under your horse's chin and not, you know, dead center of his blaze.
Don't start on the bridge of his nose.
Do not start there. Yeah.
I will say from personal experience, I like how the magic eraser sponges work on synthetic tech.
Yes. And also they're just good for everything. They're really good for everything.
They're handy. Yeah.
So that's how you can keep your white tack looking absolutely spiffy. I like to use a very, very gentle, like, glycerin cleaner, and I hardly use any at all. And then I follow up with a balsam conditioner just to keep my tack strong and flexible. Because I want to avoid the cracks. I want to avoid the, you know, the snap stirrup leathers and things like that. Now,
so where do you fall? Because this is one of those divisive topics. When tack gets dry and cracked and crumbly, some people say, even if you make it soft again, it's not as strong as it used to be.
It's not.
It shouldn't be used. And other people say, oh, as long as it's soft, you're okay. Where do you fall?
Well, from science, tells me the protein bonds in cracked leather are not strong. So you can condition the snot out of it. It's going to get soft again, but you'll never, ever get the strength back. Unfortunately, leather cannot go to the gym and get stronger by pumping.
It's not going to heal because it's not attached to the creature anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's yes. So it's great if you want to, take that risk. I happen to be personally highly risk averse because I'm highly risk averse, and yet I still end up in the ER every now and again because of dumb horse things. So for me, I would rather take some dry cracked saddle or tack or halter or bridle, get it really, really beautifully taken care of and cleaned and oiled, and then put it in a shadow box to hang as a reminder of how much I love my horse.
There you go. Yes. Dried, cracked tack. I agree with you. Dried, crumbly, crackly tack makes excellent decorative pieces. And mm-hmm. the trick there is do not use neatsfoot oil if you're going to hang it in your house as a decorative piece because it's stinky.
It is. It yeah. really, really is. So that is, so we talked about darkening tack. We've talked about white tack. What about patent leather? Have you seen that around?
You know, you see that a little bit with, with dressage, saddle horses and stuff, a little bit with dressage horses. Yeah.
So obviously you can't use anything even remotely abrasive. Like I would even think like microfiber towels are really, really too abrasive for patent leather. So what it boils down to is you're going to have to like come up with some sort of magic way to wipe it clean with, I don't know, compressed air. And then get a teeny, 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 tiny bit of Vaseline on your fingertip and buff it with Vaseline. And that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Having never taken care of patent leather, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And pretty much, yep, that's it. And then just try not to cry too much if you get a scratch on it.
Because then you're SOL. Yeah.
Because you know what? I don't know if you could buff. If you could put the patent back into patent leather.
Call a patent attorney and ask.
Oh.
Ha, 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 ha. Look at that. Yeah, look at that.
Dad jokes for everybody today.
That's right.
So, yeah, that's the scoop on colors and leather and tack. And please, I hope that nobody ever has to deal with a broken rein or a broken billet or stirrup leather ever. It's embarrassing.
There you go. Replace them, people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So talking all about horse colors today, like the grays and the whites and the chestnuts and the bays and the palominos and the paint horses and how you can care for your horse's coat color and make his coat color be natural and not sun bleached and shiny and healthy. And like when you enter the show ring, if that's your jam, the judge is just basically going to fall over and throw the blue ribbon at you. Assuming you pick up your correct leads. That's a big, you know. But when we talk about different coat colors, there's sometimes different things you want to do for different coat colors. But there's also like these universal things you want to do for all horses. Doesn't matter the coat color.
Ooh, and that, I like that. Universal. I like that.
Universal grooming tips, doesn't matter what kind of horse you have or mule or, you know, whatever, their skin and their hair coat needs to be oily. It needs to have the natural sebum that their skin produces to coat the hair. Not only is sebum part of your horse's immune system, it has antibiotic properties. It makes everything shiny. It helps the sweats go from your horse's skin to the very tips of his hairs to help with evaporative cooling to keep his body temperature regulated because he does not have stripes like zebras do. And sebum is what gives your horse that shine. So do whatever you have to do to get that natural oil to come up. And the first place to start is always with nutrition, a well-balanced diet, high quality forage, maybe some fatty oils or some omega fatty acids to add in additional kind of shine producing. There's a lot of omega fatty acids in horse pasture, which is fantastic, but a lot of horses can't have pasture or that's very limited or they only have it part of the year. So talk to your vet or nutritionist about adding some flaxseed in or some, you know, coca soya, or anything like that. Stay away from the corn oils. They're not balanced correctly between the omega-6s and 3s. The other thing you can do is literally skip the gym, no more arm day, just groom your horse as long as you possibly can. And I use the hands-on grooming gloves because I can use two hands at the same time. We've talked about this before, about how nice it is to, you know, wax on, wax off your horse.
Yep.
The nice thing about these gloves too, and everybody tells me this all the time, they say, well, my horse isn't shedding. I'm like, that's great. Do you still need to curry comb him? Because if you use the hands-on grooming gloves, you've replaced every curry comb imaginable, and you can do their legs, their butt cheeks, their faces, their ears, their little chinny chin chins, all the places that it's really difficult to get your traditional curry comb in. So I like threw all of my stuff out. I simplified everything. I was like, I needed to Marie Kondo my grooming box. There was so much stuff in there that didn't give me joy, and I got rid of all of it, and I just use the gloves now. And I timed myself the other day about how long I actually use the gloves on my horse. And I do 8 to 10 minutes per side. That's a long time.
That's a very long time.
And you know what? He is in heaven every single minute of it. And he is so shiny and his coat is so oily. It is just put the time in, people. Put the time in. So, have you seen this trick about getting gray horses and white horses bright using ketchup?
Somehow, yes, actually. My next door neighbor and landlord, who also has two horses, has one who is a paint with a lot of white. And she tried it one time and it made a difference.
Yeah, it does make a difference.
Doesn't make any sense to me, but...
No, and it doesn't... And again, it doesn't make any sense to me either, but when I started thinking about why it might work, it's because one of the main ingredients in ketchup is vinegar, which is a really handy grooming tool. It's inexpensive. You can pick it up at the store. So my thing with using ketchup on a gray or a white horse is that, so you have to put the ketchup on and then you have to take the ketchup off. And normally you're going to use a shampoo that's designed for a gray or a white horse. So why not just skip the ketchup and use the shampoo to start with? First of all, I can't get past the thought of using a whole bunch of ketchup on my horse. Like I just like yuck. And I want to be a little bit more efficient with my time. So I'm just like, I'm going to scrap the ketchup. I'm going to use the white vinegar instead. And then follow up with a shampoo, or you can use the shampoo first and then follow up with a white vinegar. Now, the bonus to using just plain old regular white vinegar is that you can make pickles later if you have leftovers, but you the vinegar will also take any residue, any shampoo, any conditioner's residue off your horse's skin. And when that residue is removed, a lot of horses get really itchy if they have some like suds left on. So you're basically creating a really clean slate with no leftover residue that could possibly make your horse be itchy.
Now, I would like you to further define white vinegar, because sometimes vinegar can get a little confusing for people because there's lots of different kinds. So what really is white vinegar and where in the grocery store do I find it?
You find it, usually I find it in like the baking section, and I just buy like the big gallons of distilled white vinegar.
There we go. Distilled white vinegar.
Distilled white vinegar.
Not the kind that says for cleaning only in the cleaning department. Not the same stuff.
You know what? I just buy this. I want to buy the food grade stuff because again, I really like pickles. So I want double duty. The other thing is, vinegar is great to put into your horse laundry. As not only that rinsing agent to get all of the suds and things out, but it can like take some of the, how you say, the funky horse smell out of things.
Gotcha.
And it takes the funky horse smell out of your washing machine drum too.
Well, that's important because we all know that we do the laundry in the washing machine at the house whenever the horse spouse is not looking and you want to remove all evidence. So. Helpful hint right there, ladies. So you've got the tail all clean and beautiful, and you've got the coat clean and beautiful. We've used some vinegar of the white distilled kind from the cooking section of your grocery store to get all the residue of suds and soap out of there. How can we maximize conditioning?
So again, it all boils down to elbow grease, using the gloves, get your horse really oily from the inside and out. Now, there's going to be times where the stain is so insurmountable. It is the Mount Everest of stains, and you're going to have to go to like your bluing shampoos and things like that to not only rid the stain, but also kind of coat the hair in a brighter sheen, so to speak. Please don't use detergents on your horse. Like, a lot of people like to use laundry detergents. I've seen people try and use actual straight up bleach on your horse, but then you run into the problem where anytime you use a detergent, you're going to take the sebum, all that good immune boosting stuff, out of your horse's skin and hair and strip it away. It's like taking the wax off a car. You are stripping the protective layers away when you use detergents. And then you have a brittle hair coat, you've got dry, cracked skin, and your horse is more likely to get stained. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because you've taken the wax off your horse.
Are you saying then that using a appropriate conditioner is, now assuming you're putting the conditioner on hair that is not stained, can help prevent stains from happening to start with?
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. And if you do end up with a horse that has a dry coat, a lot of horses just have a naturally dry coat. I am all about using Shein products because they don't have the antibacterial properties and immune system properties that sebum does, but they will provide protection for the hair shaft to kind of make them more, stain resistant. So Magic Sheen is my absolute favorite. It's made by Shapley's. And the difference between Magic Sheen and other Sheen products is that Magic Sheen is super concentrated. They don't cut it with any alcohol, so it's non-drying. And I can go I use a couple of spritzes like every week. It's not a daily occurrence. So then you're also saving money because you're spreading out how much you're using and how frequently. But basically you have to do what you can to deal with the stains, use the bluing shampoos. I'm totally fine with that. But know that if you're going to strip your horse's coat, you're going to end up with much, much worse stains and probably an uncomfortable horse. Like, I can't imagine that, having that natural layer of protection removed is going to be super comfortable. And if you're in a huge, huge pickle and you need to just get your horse just a little bit brighter and your bluing shampoo's not doing it, just sprinkle them with baby powder.
That's a really handy way to to brighten white socks, or
absolutely.
The favorite part is their hip and their butt.
Yes.
Where they get that permanent icky color. Even if it's not a green strain, it's like, it's just not quite right. The white baby powder, some people use cornstarch. Very, very handy indeed.
It is. And Shapley's also makes a product called Show Touch Up, which is it's pigment in a can that you can spray directly on your horse, or you can put it like on a brush or on your hand and do touch ups and things like that. Great also for covering scars. But again, the bottom line is if you find yourself saying, I need to do scorched earth grooming and like go to the automotive department and like take my horse down to like the studs, you're not doing the basics correctly. Like when you reach scorched earth level of grooming, you've missed a lot of steps to get there. So go back to the basics, go back to a good diet, go back to grooming every single day before and after, go back to adding fly sheets and other barriers between your horse and your, the environment that can be really, really dirty.
Yeah.
Step up your stall cleaning game. There's lots of things to do. And also, I say skip the ketchup. Honestly, go straight for the distilled white vinegar and, just skip the red hot mess. You're going to get
It's such a great conversation starter, though.
It is. And it's kind of like, but then you have this whole situation where if there's, you know, swatting at flies and there's ketchup flying everywhere, and it's just, it just seems like it could be like a crime scene, you know, rehash in your crossed eyes. So those are the light colored horses, but I also want to talk about like the other types of horses. And the main summer grooming concern that I hear all the time is my horse, he just looks bleached out, which can totally happen. But we want to make sure that, again, it boils down to what's on your horse's coat. Is he oily from natural sebum, or is he super sweaty and salty and crusty?
That would be Nigel. Super sweaty, yeah, salty, and crusty.
Super. Yeah. And that's, you know, it can be their personality as well as what their coat is like. You know, there's double meanings
that's right,
here.
Yeah.
But when you find a grooming routine that works for you and your horse, that includes doing some sort of sweat removal after a ride, especially on a dark horse, you're going to stay ahead of the sun bleaching aspect. And you can rinse the sweat off. You can sponge it off. I use a cactus cloth to move sweat.
They're awesome.
Super handy. Really, really handy. You can use your gloves to get any dried stuff off, the hands-on grooming gloves. You could use a hose. There's lots and lots of ways to do it. And I prefer that they dry in the shade or in the cross ties, especially if it's really hot, with like a fan on them to help the evaporative cooling. And then put them outside when they're not wet.
In the perfect world, yes.
In the perfect world. Now, in the logical, imperfect world that we live in with time constraints and things like that, I'm going to go, my top vote is always going to be make sure their diet's good. Sometimes copper deficiencies have started to be kind of pinged for a cause of a horse that has a sun bleached coat. Mm-hmm. So check with your vet to
That's
make
a good
sure.
vet question year.
Yeah, it's yeah. a great vet question, because again, don't just say, well, my horse is sun bleached, I'm going to throw a bunch of copper at him, because obviously you don't want to put him into some sort of like copper toxicity or something like that. They do need a little bit in their diets, but he might already be getting enough. And again, you might need to just go back to doing the basics of a little bit more elbow grease.
So it's groom twice, wash once.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I am such a huge fan of fly sheets that go from your horse's poll all the way down, covering most of his tail. There are some really, really good ones out there that are affordable that will keep your horse, you know, shaded from the sun, so that if you do need to toss your horse back into his paddock or whatnot, and he's still a little wet or damp, that's going to help as well. And luckily, you know, honestly, if he's bleached out under the saddle or, you know, under the bridle, you know, if you're showing, your judge isn't going to be able to see it, assuming.
Yeah. You know, I used to see this a lot when I was showing a lot at horse shows a lot. So I'm sure it still happens. I'm just not at the horse shows to see it. Is the horse who has the distinctively bleached out saddle shape on his
yes.
back from using
yeah.
the
it
wrong
happens.
Kind of detergent on your saddle pad.
Yeah. And actually, that's another really good point, too, is that a lot of the products that we use, horses might be a little sensitive to it. That's why if I find a laundry detergent, I like the free varieties of laundry detergent. And if, you know, I know my saddle pads get clean in them and they don't irritate my horse's skin, that's what I'm going to stick with. I'm not going to like mess around with different types of detergents and stuff for his clothing as
One
well.
One of the things that we used to make a habit of back in the day, when we had a barn load of horses and they were getting ridden lots and lots, every other day. So if the saddle pad got used twice, if it got used twice in the same day, that counted.
Right.
The saddle pad got used twice. It got tossed in the washing machine, but we didn't put soap in at all.
Oh yeah, you can just rinse it. And you know, nowadays, if you have one of those nozzles from the garden supply that has a fan or a jet setting on it, you can hose off the underside of them quite easily and toss them on the fence in the shade to dry in between like thorough washings.
That's how I do it. When Nigel wears a baby pad underneath of his saddle pad to help keep the harder to wash saddle pad from getting dirty. I don't care if it gets sweaty. Just keep the
pad off.
And I just take that baby pad and just every time I use it, I hose it off and hang it up and it works great.
Yep. So what do you do if you have a sun bleached horse? Well, you can either, again, you know, go back to basics, attack the diet. And by attack the diet, I mean, you know, analyze it and make sure it's all good and whatnot. You can also use color correcting shampoos. The Equitone line from Shapley's is fantastic. They even make a gold color for the Palominos out there, which it's a nice way to add a little depth back into your horse. Again, he might have a light coat genetically, and if you want to add a little depth into his coat, you can use one of the Equitone shampoos, the gold, the red, the black, and they have the whitening, which actually is good for all colors of horse. And that's just a way you can start to add the layers back in. And I've got a funny story, kind of funny, haha, kind of funny. Oh my gosh, I can't believe somebody did that. But a friend of a friend of a friend many, many years ago had a Friesian. And obviously Friesians are jet black by design. But he lived in Southern California and he was a huge sweater because they have really thick, coarse hair coats. And he just, as the summer went on, he went from jet black to kind of like dingy gray. And she really wanted to just wow the judges in the show ring. So she went to the drugstore and she got like 3 boxes of L'Oreal hair color or Revlon hair, whatever, hair color in jet black. And she dyed her horse. Now,
whole horse?
Yeah,
wow.
The whole horse. Yeah, it ended badly. It ended really badly. He, and she did it like the day before a show. And the next day at the show, he was sweating in a saddle pad. And then all of a sudden his sweat is purple and he's sweating through his saddle pad and everything's turning like this really dark shade of purple. And it's starting to like be sweat off of him. And then he's streaked. And it was just a bad, bad scene.
Wow.
It was a bad scene. And also, you know, all of the peroxides and the ammonia and things like that in hair color, probably not the best for your horse, but I didn't actually see it. I only heard about it, but I thought somebody's got a lot of splaining to do then, right? Be like, lovely trot work, grooming needs help in the test comments.
Yeah. And to try something kind of off the wall and radical like that the day before a show is probably not your best bet.
Right. And but I really, really like to keep things super simple and the basics. And I love technology. Don't get me wrong. There's amazing technology and horse products out there. But I'm always going to go to grooming, nutrition, turnout exercise. Then the products are going to be like the accessories. Those are there to help you, not to take the place of everything else. So I'm kindly going to get off my soapbox right now and definitely please email me if you have any specific questions about coat colors and things like that. But in a nutshell, go back to the basics, skip the ketchup. There we go.
Wow. Sounds like good advice to me.
Mm-hmm.
So for folks who want to stalk you appropriately, where can they find you online?
Oh, you can find me in the Facebook group, which is the Professional Equine Grooms group. Pinterest is great because it is a slew of all my current articles organized by kind of topic like healthcare and grooming and equipment and tack and things like that. And it kind of can contain all of the kind of encyclopedia categories of articles. And then just hit me up on the website, which is proequinegrooms.com. Tons of stuff there.
Tons of stuff there. And you can find links today to today's guest, as well as other show notes at horsesofthemorning.com. It's episode for June 27th, 2019. And you can also follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. Have all the shows with you wherever you go by downloading the free Horse Radio Network app for your iPhone or your Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. It's a free app with no ads. And might I suggest, for the less tech-savvy folks in your life, gently take their phone from them, download the app and show them how to use it. They will thank you later.
You're so nice. Gently take the phone from them. I'd be like, give me your phone, lady. Give me your phone. Come on now.
And if I remember right, you have a special offer from Shapley.
Hands On Grooming Gloves has free shipping with code PEG.
Ooh, there you go. Time to get some gloves.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll be back again tomorrow with more Horses in the Morning. See ya.